Hi there, Jonathan Mosier here from the Pima County Attorney's Office. I'm the Chief Criminal Deputy, and I'm really excited to be able to talk this morning about things that are happening in our office that are innovative and effective. So we've talked before on the show about keeping our community safe from dangerous, violent, sexual offenders, and that can often get pretty dark in terms of talking about some of the bad things that happen in Tucson. But today is something that's a lot more uplifting, because in our criminal justice innovation efforts at the Pima County Attorney's Office, there have been alternatives to incarceration that have been introduced. And the two women who are here this morning are the people who have done this work. And it makes me incredibly proud that Pima County is a leader in creating specialty courts, treatment alternatives. So we're trying to keep people out of prison and rehabilitate people who would otherwise be sent to prison. So with that introduction of what we're here to talk about, I want to ask Amelia Craig Kramer is the chief deputy at the county attorney's office. And it's been my honor and privilege to work with Amelia and have her really be my boss for many years. And so, Amelia, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and just give us some of your background?
Sure. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Jonathan. I've been a lawyer since 1986, and I was in private practice with large law firms in Washington, D.C., and San Francisco, and Tucson, Phoenix. For a number of years, I also managed a couple of nonprofits. I was the managing attorney for Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund in Los Angeles, and then GLBT Advocates and Defenders in Boston, and did LGBT civil rights work and civil rights work for people with HIV/AIDS. When I came back to my home state of Arizona in 1997, I was in private practice with a large firm for several years. And during that time, I volunteered as the co-general counsel for the Arizona Civil Liberties Union. And I handled in private practice a number of cases on behalf of prison inmates who were mentally ill. In fact, in California, I was part of a group of attorneys who were the plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit that was successful in reforming the California prison system to help 25,000 inmates in prison who were suffered from mental illness. So it was kind of unexpected that I would land at the county attorney's office, and I actually came in through the civil division after my wife and I adopted our daughter, because I was looking for a government job where I'd have a little better hours than I had in private practice. So I did civil practice in the county attorney's office. For a couple of years, I was promoted to be the chief of the civil division. And after that, was promoted to chief deputy, and I had quite a learning curve with regards to criminal justice and prosecution, and thankfully worked for an innovative prosecutor in Barbara LaWall, the county attorney, who gave me the opportunity to implement her vision of having some sort of drug treatment alternative to prison program in Pima County, the first of its type in Arizona, the first of its type, I think, west of the Mississippi, and I've been honored and privileged to be able to help develop that program for the county attorney's office, as well as a number of other criminal justice innovation programs that have helped to reduce the incarcerated population and get individuals into treatment and out of the criminal justice system.
Thanks, Amelia. It's great to hear your background. And as a trial prosecutor who's focused on violent crimes, it's just so refreshing to hear somebody with your experience who's at our office and making great things happen. And I know you've worked closely with Kate Vesely, who has also joined us today. And thanks for being here, Kate. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got involved in this work?
Well, sure. Thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. I am from Tucson. I got my master's degree from the University of Arizona in public administration. And while I was in grad school, I happened to get an internship at Superior Court, working on the first mental health court in felony level in Arizona. I fell in love with it and decided that specialty courts and justice system reform is the career for me. Since then, I've worked in the court system. I've worked in the jail, restoration of competency. I've worked in the clinical field, running mental health courts, and then came to the county attorney's office a little less than 5 years ago, and have been working on specialty courts, the DTAP program, as Amelia mentioned, and other specialty court programs that Barbara LaWall has been exploring.
And I, just to to describe my own learning process. Recently, when I was promoted to Chief Criminal Deputy, it's become important for me to learn about what the office is doing in this area. And it's really been impressive. Also, at times overwhelming to try to figure out everything you guys have done, because you have really done a lot of work, and there's a vast array of treatment programs and specialty courts and treatment providers. And so kind of understanding that landscape is exciting. It's also a little bit challenging. So I want the listener to hold on to their seat a little bit as we dive into the specifics. I think the best way to go about it is to just go back to the origin of your work together. We mentioned the drug treatment alternative to prison program, and it really is just one of many things you've done in this area, but let's take it to start with, because is it accurate to say that's the first program that you guys collaborated on?
It was.
Can you tell us about that? How did it begin?
So back in 2010, Barbara LaWall had a strategic planning meeting of the chiefs of the various divisions in the office, and with me there as the chief deputy. And one of the goals that she had for that time period was to try to come up with a strategic plan to develop some sort of drug treatment alternative to prison. And she asked me if I would take that project on, and I happily agreed. It's an area that I have a personal interest in and some experience in. And so she suggested that I meet with the other leaders of the criminal justice system agencies, as well as treatment providers in the community, and begin a strategic planning process that she indicated would likely take approximately a year to come up with a proposal, and then we might take a year or two after that to look for some funding to try to implement it, because it was something that we did not anticipate there'd be funding for through the county, given its financial constraints at the time. So I did call together an initial meeting of some of the criminal justice leaders and a couple of treatment providers who expressed interest after reaching out to the community. And there was unanimous support for exploring this idea and coming up with a strategic plan. And then about 3 weeks later, Barbara came and said, "Hey, I just found out about a potential funding opportunity from the federal government. I'm sending you to Washington, D.C. to learn about it next week. And we'd have to have a grant proposal in within a month."
Wow.
So that's how it happened. And the 15 agencies that came together in the room were contacted, and we asked them to come back and put together a grant proposal, and they did. So we scrambled, then we waited for 9 months, and then we got the funding. So beginning of 2011, we were able to implement what we had come up with, which was a evidence-based program to assess and evaluate who suffers from substance use disorder, has high risk and high need for treatment, high risk to continue to commit the crime of possessing drugs because they're addicted, suffering from substance use disorder, and to have that population go into a special alternative to prison where they would have supervised probation, judicial monitoring, drug testing, but also receive residential treatment services, intensive outpatient treatment services, and wraparound services such as dental care for methamphetamine addicts whose teeth have rotted out, eye care for people who need it, medical care, counseling, job training, job placement, transportation services. So that's what we used the grant funding for. And we had wonderful partners in the Superior Court, in the Probation Department, Public Defense Services, and a number of treatment agencies in the community. And that's actually how I met Kate, because she was a liaison to our task force of community leaders with respect to the DTAP, the Drug Treatment Alternative to Prison Program.
And I want to take one step back, just kind of on the big picture level, and point out, it's really amazing, Amelia, you have a background that includes working to try to make prisons more humane, I mean, put simply, right? And you were faced with a problem before the Drug Treatment Alternative to Prison program was created, and before Barbara, you know, kind of empowered you to come up with this whole program, you faced a problem. And the problem is that addicts get sent to prison and they don't get better there.
They get worse.
And they get out and they reoffend because they're drug addicted. So they reoffend by possessing drugs again. And this all happens at great expense to our community, upwards of $30,000 a year to house an inmate in prison, where they're almost always getting no treatment. And so what you did is you filled a gap by going out and getting money from grants, meaning finding funds wherever you could, and creating a program that puts these addicts in a treatment alternative to prison. And so I just kind of wanted to underscore what we're talking about, because when we dive deep into this, it gets, like I say, it gets really technical. But at the same time, I want to explain to people why they should be so excited about it, because it's making a difference, because people come out better more often in this program. And is that true? Have you had success in the program?
We've had tremendous success. So we've had evaluators, outside evaluators, conduct three different cost-benefit analyses and assess the efficacy of this program. And what they've found every time is it costs far less than prison, and the success rate is far greater in reducing recidivism. And we have people who've been addicts back in the community with jobs, their kids in the home, living successful lives instead of being in the criminal justice system.
All right. Thank you. We'll come back after a brief break. Hi there, Jonathan Mosier here from the Pima County Attorney's Office, and we're delighted to be talking with Amelia Craig Kramer and Kate Vesely about our drug treatment alternative to prison program, and we'll get to some other specialty courts in a little bit, but I just want to underscore we're talking about a program that instead of sending people to prison, really tries to provide them with some rehabilitation treatment services, and these are people who are addicted to drugs and are going to reoffend if they don't get treatment. So with that in mind, Kate Vesely is here, and she, Kate, tell us about some of the success stories that you've seen in this program.
Well, one success story, his name is Patrick, and I have permission to talk about his story and his experience. He is an extraordinary individual. He's a graduate of the DTAP program, and he actually currently works in the treatment community currently with our DTAP participants. Patrick was a wrestler and developed a lot of injuries as a result of his wrestling career, and got hooked on prescription medications from the pain that came along with those injuries, and rapidly just spiraled out of control when he was not able to continue to take the prescription medications, ended up using heroin, and it spiraled to the point that he was in our program. And during the course of his program, he just showed tremendous growth. He really needed that level of intensity and treatment in order to attain recovery. Unfortunately, during the time that he was in the program, his wife died unexpectedly, and he was able to get through that horrendous grieving process with the support of the team without having a single relapse.
And when you say, I want to be real specific with our listeners about what it means in terms of a person's history, if they qualify for the program, what does it take for a person to be eligible for the drug treatment alternative to prison program?
So we only take people who have prison-only pleas, which means typically at the point that they get into the DTAP program, they've already had two felony drug convictions, although for many of our participants, it's much more. Many of our participants have already been to prison several times. They've already had multiple opportunities on probation, but for whatever reason, that level of engagement, the level of treatment was not sufficient, because our program really targets those high-risk, high-need individuals who have very serious acute issues with substance use disorder. And it isn't until we have a very intensive treatment and supervision program that we give them the services they need to be able to attain recovery.
And I want to make sure we're clear, still as our first fundamental priority, we've got to keep our community safe. And so we're not talking about dangerous or violent or sexual offenders. How do you screen people appropriately so that the people that you're working with are people who, at the core of the issue, have a drug addiction problem?
We specifically screen out violent or dangerous individuals. So at the point that somebody is referred to the program, we actually have a detective when the county attorney's office do a background check. And so they're not only looking at their current charges, but their whole history. Is there any history of weapons? Is there any history of violence or dangerous? And so we exclude those individuals. So we really make sure that we're taking people in the program who are appropriate for treatment, not going to be dangerous to the community, and not going to be dangerous to our other participants.
And so, Kate, you actually work in the Pima County Attorney's Office. What's your title?
I am the Director of Specialty Court Initiatives.
So you are an employee of a prosecutor's office, and what you're doing is work to provide treatment alternatives to prison and help rehabilitate drug-addicted folks.
Correct. It's not just the DTAP program. Barbara LaWall has been very progressive at looking at a number of different types of programs, interventions, and we've participated broadly with everything else that's happening in the county, which is significant.
And I look forward to getting to some of the other programs in a moment, but I do want to follow up with just a few more questions about DTAP for either Amelia or Kate, whoever wants to address this. What are their hurdles to setting up the program? What are the barriers to success?
Well, that's a good question. And the first barrier to success was the funding, because these services cost a lot of money. And Pima County is not a wealthy county, and our tax dollars are going to police, they're going to, wastewater treatment, bridges, roads, those sorts of things, parks. There are a lot of needs that the county has, and there's not extra money lying around to provide innovative services all the time. And so that's why we had to go obtain federal grant funding, and we've obtained some state grant funding, some private grant funding, to be able to provide the services that the participants in the DTAP program need in order to be able to succeed and to live drug-free, crime-free lives.
So this program costs money. You've been able to fund it through grants. But does it save any money?
It saves a lot of money. So these outside evaluations that have been conducted by our outside evaluators, most recently by the University of Arizona, have demonstrated that per participant in the DTAP program, we're saving more than $17,000 a year.
So some of us might be thinking, hey, why isn't the State Department of Corrections not funding work like this? It sounds like it's more effective than prison for this population. Do you see reduced recidivism? How does the effectiveness of the drug treatment alternative to prison program compare to the effectiveness of sending a drug addict to prison?
It's twice as effective. So we see a tremendous drop in the recidivism rate, the repetition of crime rate. So folks that participate in the DTAP program, in order to graduate, have to stay crime-free for 3 years, and they do. Even those who fail the program and end up in prison, when they come out, have a lower rate of reoffending than those who didn't have the program and went to prison. So it's been a tremendous success. You know, some of the things that we fund in the criminal justice system in Arizona are funded in silos. So we have one set of funds that supports the DTAP program, and the savings are not realized through that silo of funding. They're realized in the Department of Corrections, and we've saved literally millions of dollars over the past 9 years for the Department of Corrections by being able to refrain from sending these individuals to prison, keeping them in the community. They've become taxpaying members of the community who actually have probably paid back in taxes more than we spent on sending them through the DTAP program.
You know, you point out we're saving money for the Department of Corrections in a way, but are we seeing that money given back to help us promote and foster programs like this?
Well, we have been fortunate. We haven't gotten that much money back, but the state legislature did a couple of years ago make a significant appropriation to Pima County for us to run the DTAP program and to be able to pay for the additional probation officers that we need to provide monitoring of this population and assistance. You know, one of my favorite stories is a probation officer went to check on a DTAP participant out in the field in that individual's home. And it was somebody who was just setting up an apartment for the first time, and the probation officer was helping hang curtains. So there's monitoring that happens, but also support that happens with the entire DTAP team, and we've been really pleased to see that.
Well, so I just want to put this in blunt terms, because I'm a daily NPR listener, and I'm not hearing this story on NPR. I'm hearing the story that prosecutors are responsible for mass incarceration. And I'm talking to two people who work in my office, which is the Pima County Attorney's Office, who are charged with, on their work hours, creating and funding a program that's designed to keep people out of prison and get addicts treatment. I mean, am I hearing that correctly?
You are hearing that correctly, and it's not common. That's why we feel very fortunate to be here in Pima County, where we have a county attorney who's gone out and sought these federal funds, state funds, and we're back at the legislature in the coming session seeking additional funding for drug courts, DTAP, and diversion programs to help fund these kinds of services to keep people out of prison, out of jail, and out of the criminal justice system and get their lives back on track.
And I want to follow up on that, Amelia, because, you know, the one place where I don't feel like I'm an expert on the things that you and Kate have been doing, you guys are the experts. But boy, I sure have spent a lot of time prosecuting violent and dangerous offenders, sex offenders, domestic violence crimes. And what I think we can all agree on is that we want to keep our community safe. We want to protect families and children. But at the same time, we do not want to see drug addicts just continuously recycled through the system. And so I want to thank you both for your efforts, because quite literally, you're changing lives. You know, and so good outcomes in a program where you're providing a methamphetamine addicted individual with dental care and job interview skills and a chance to get a job and pay taxes and have a life, instead of sending them to a warehouse in prison where at great expense they don't get better. It's a miracle. So, but you know, one criticism of the program might be that it is too small. We're not serving thousands and thousands of individuals. You know, we're striving to get hundreds of people through this particular program. So are you doing other things that are reaching more people?
We are. So as Kate had previously mentioned, the DTAP program is reserved for individuals who would otherwise be mandatorily sent to prison under the Arizona sentencing laws because they have been repetitive felony convicted individuals. But what Barbara has authorized Kate and me to work on is to create a continuum of services. And what we've been trying to do is fill the gaps in the criminal justice system so that we can get an off-ramp to treatment for people from the very earliest stages. And one of the things that we have advocated is law enforcement assisted deflection, so that an individual who is stopped for trespassing and shoplifting and when patted down has a baggie of heroin in his pocket, rather than being arrested and taken to the jail, can be taken directly to a treatment provider. And we're thrilled that the Tucson Police Department a year ago initiated a pilot program to do that. And Kate Vesely actually helped put together the grant proposal and the programming for that. And it's been a tremendous success with the Tucson Police Department implementing it.
One thing we know from research is that the more contact somebody has with the criminal justice system, the more likely they are to remain criminally involved. And so the more we can intervene early, identify individuals who need treatment earlier on in the justice system, the better chance we have of getting them the help and treatment that they need so they don't continue to reoffend. And so all of these programs are designed to try and intervene as rapidly as possible, as early as possible in the system, so that we can break that cycle of incarceration.
So what happens if you described law enforcement deflection, which is essentially taking somebody whose issue is drug addiction rather than crimes that threaten our community in terms of having victims of the crime? Those people are taken to treatment facility instead of being taken to jail. And I'm imagining that might also represent a cost savings as well as being more effective. Is there any information on that, Kate?
I think that they just started gathering data. I know that program, it's called the You Matter program through the Pima County Pima County Criminal Justice Reform Unit, and I know that they're just starting to gather. But every single person that gets deflected to one of those detox units instead of going to jail, just that initial booking is a $300 savings right there, and that doesn't include any additional jail time.
So what happens along the continuum of services, as you put it, Amelia, what happens with the person who does not succeed through deflection? Are there other programs that you both have worked on to fill that gap?
So there are other programs, and they, because of the way the criminal laws are set up in Arizona, they fit into two categories, misdemeanors and felonies. So one of the things that we've discovered is there are a number of individuals in our community who suffer from not only substance use disorder or addiction, but also from mental illness, a co-occurring disorder, who are friendly faces at the jail because they get arrested more than a dozen times in a year. And so, in looking at those individuals, Kate really helped devise a evidence-based best practices program that we could implement that would assist those individuals in misdemeanor courts. And, you know, drug possession is a felony for methamphetamine or heroin or cocaine, but these individuals don't get arrested for those felonies, not because they don't use those drugs, indeed because they use them quicker than other individuals who may be suffering from substance use disorder. When they get arrested for trespassing and shoplifting, they don't have heroin in their pocket because they wouldn't put it in their pocket. They use it the minute they get it. These are the most addicted individuals. And so what Kate has helped to design is a consolidated misdemeanor problem-solving court, because one of the things we found is that a number of these individuals who are being arrested frequently get arrested in different jurisdictions, in the city of Tucson, in the town of Marana, in Pima County by the Sheriff's Department. And so they may have cases pending in multiple courts. So what we've been able to develop with the collaboration of the Superior Court and the city courts and the Justice Court, as well as prosecutors and defense attorneys, both from the city and the county, and treatment providers, is this consolidated misdemeanor problem-solving court. And Kate, right here, is the court coordinator.
We'll come back to Compass Court right after the break. We're back, and we had left off talking about Compass Court. Again, my name is Jonathan Mosier. I'm with the Pima County Attorney's Office. I'm here with Amelia Craig Kramer, our chief deputy, and with Kate Vesely, who coordinates programs that really are little miracles. And the reason I say that is we just left off talking about Compass Court, which stands for Consolidated Misdemeanor Problem-Solving Court. And if I understand correctly, this court is designed to address people who are not the violent, dangerous offenders who we need to protect the community from, but rather they're low-level offenders who just keep reoffending because of the co-occurrence, we say, of both mental health issues and substance abuse issues. And so, Kate, tell us, it sounds like the program is in its infancy. I'm super excited to hear about it. And tell us, like, why you made it, what it does, how it works.
That's right, Jonathan. So we only just started in March. The program, I started thinking about something like this over 10 years ago, back in the days when I was working in the clinical field, and we were running mental health courts all across the county. And I would have a defendant come into Marana Mental Health Court, and I would say, oh no, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in the Tucson City Mental Health Court today. They had multiple court programs, and the criminal justice system is complicated even for people who don't have serious mental health issues. And for these individuals, they were constantly getting failures to appear because it's just very difficult to manage all these different court systems.
And sorry to interrupt, Kate, but I just get super excited about this issue because that's so important. My wife, Heather, who's also a prosecutor, attended a reentry simulation that was designed to show what it's like if you get out of prison and you're trying to get your life back together. And most of the people who are going, this is a simulation where we basically pretended that you're out of prison and you've got to go do all the things that you're told to do. And most of the people going through this process, about halfway through the simulation, said, just send me back to prison. I can't get this all done. It seemed hopeless for them. So what we don't want to do is get people caught up in that kind of a cycle. So Sorry to interrupt, but that's what you're talking about.
I love those simulations. If anybody has an opportunity to attend one, I highly recommend it. They're fabulous. Yes. And so this is the population we're talking about. We're not talking about these violent, dangerous offenders. We're talking about the person that you see at the Circle K who they're constantly having to ask to leave. They're people who are in the parks and they have lots of failures to appear because they don't know when their court dates are. They don't have transportation to get there. They have very intermittent contact with their treatment providers because they just don't have that support system and organization to be able to get where they need to go. And so these are very, very costly individuals to the system. Taxpayers are paying a small fortune in keeping these individuals in jail only to be released back to the parks and the bridges where they are typically residing. This program is designed to consolidate all of those outstanding court cases into one program and give not just treatment, it's a whole person approach. Because when you just deal with treatment, you're only dealing with one aspect of that person's needs. We're not addressing housing. We're not addressing transportation. We're not addressing how they're going to eat today. And so the Compass Court program is really designed to wrap around that person and give them all the support that they need in order to be successful. We had one individual who, prior to coming into the program, in the year before he entered the program, he had 260 contacts with law enforcement. Some of them resulted in arrests and going to jail. Other times they were just transporting him to the hospital or to detox. But 260 times, Tucson Police Department had to spend their officer time interacting with him. Since he's entered the program in March, he's had 2 law enforcement contacts. So it's been a huge improvement as far as how much officer time. He's got a lot of more stability than he has had before. He's in housing for the first time that he's been in many, many years.
So without Kate, Amelia, Compass Court, we have somebody who is going to continue to get rearrested. And so if you're pro-crime, if you really want crime, whether it's low level, what, you know, just keep doing what we're doing, and it's at great cost. Or we can create a program, which has now been done, which reduces his 260 law enforcement contacts to 2 and costs less. What I'm excited about, Kate, when I heard you speaking, is that it sounds like you're talking about an array of services. You're not just talking about treating the drug addiction. You're also talking about treating mental health issues. And especially you talked about housing. I just think this is kind of a little miracle that people don't know about, is that our prosecutor's office, this is the Pima County Attorney's Office, has somebody on our staff who is addressing homelessness in Tucson?
Absolutely. And what I hear a lot from people is, if somebody has done something wrong, shouldn't they go to jail? Shouldn't they be held accountable? And the answer to that is always yes, as far as being held accountable. But the fact of the matter is they don't stay in jail. They're going to come back out into the community. And how do we keep our community safe? Is by breaking that cycle. In order to keep our community safe, that's why our office is pursuing these initiatives.
We're talking about the type of offender who goes to Circle K and shoplifts a candy bar or something to eat because they're hungry, and we're not excusing that conduct, but we are not talking about the sexually violent or gun violence. We're not talking about domestic violence. We're talking about low-level offenders who will continue to reoffend. And so what I'm curious about, though, Kate, just to drill down to some of the specifics, how do you deal with housing? Who helps you with housing alternatives?
Housing continues to be our biggest issue in the community, and we have to kind of piecemeal it together. We find supportive housing communities wherever we can, and we use grant funding. We have some a mini grant from Pima County Board of Supervisors, which is really helps us out a lot, being able to find short-term housing. The main issue is finding supportive long-term housing facilities. And that's continues to be one of the main projects that we work on, that we have partnered with probation to look into and hope to find better solutions for the future. But right now, we just try and make it work the best we can.
That's fantastic. So, Amelia, with the Compass Court, Consolidated Misdemeanor Problem Solving Court that we've been talking about, are these common? Is this kind of one of a kind, or how many of these are there around the country?
I'm not aware of any other one in the country, and as Kate said a little while earlier, this was her brainchild about a decade ago. And, you know, in meeting with her in the office and with Barbara LaWall, she proposed this idea. And Barbara said, go for it. And I was able to work with Kate on helping to develop a grant proposal and submit it to the federal government. And we received a number of federal grants and have received some other funding that we're using to put this together. But the collaboration that we've received from other leaders in the criminal justice system in Pima County has been phenomenal. We've had to have the support of the courts. We've had to have the support of defense services. We've had to have support from the city and the county, and we've received all of that support and collaboration.
And law enforcement, that's been a big boon to our program, is being able to have Tucson Police Department actually be a member of our team. We have police officers or sergeants participating in our staffings, being able to give real-time information about their most recent contacts. And if there's some special deflection that we're going to be doing with this individual, if they have contact with law enforcement, rather than just being taken directly to jail, they'll call the MIST team sergeant and ask, what should I do with this person? Should they go to treatment?
MIST team is what?
The mental health support team with Tucson Police Department.
So what, if I'm following, you're talking about a system where we have prosecutors, legal defense services means basically public defenders. We have prosecutors, public defenders, and the courts, judges, and probation and pretrial services all working together in this community with law enforcement officers to get the job done on things like Compass Court.
And treatment. Treatment is absolutely integral. We have a treatment provider, Community Bridges, that is our main provider, but we have any number of different treatment providers participating in staffing, coming to court, and working with our participants outside.
One of the ways that I first got interested in these issues is because I met Dr. Margaret Higgins and heard about what was going on at the Haven. And I was so fascinated because, quite frankly, I'm 18 years sober, and without my sobriety and recovery, I just wouldn't even have the same life that I have. And so I wanted to go down to the Haven, which is a facility that provides treatment for people in recovery through the DTAP program, Drug Treatment Alternative to Prison, we talked about earlier. And when I saw what they're doing at the Haven, which is a neurobiological approach to addiction, it just blew me away. I was so excited to see that there's a facility like that in Tucson. But Kate, you probably know of a number of places like that where miracles are getting done. And so Compass Court and DTAP work with different treatment providers around town. Like, how many different treatment providers?
Probably close to a dozen. We're very fortunate in Tucson. We're just about the right size, that we're not too big that it's difficult to get into services, and we're not too small that we still have a number of different providers to work with. Plus, we have the best crisis system anywhere in the country. We have two psychiatric urgent care facilities that are 24/7. We have people travel all over the world to come out and see some of the facilities that we have here in Tucson. So that, partnered with a number of residential treatment facilities and outpatient providers, we're really very fortunate.
Are there areas where Compass Court either faces challenges or needs to grow? I mean, where is it at in terms of needing to build the program?
Well, we're still in the pilot phase of getting it up and running, so we will certainly be growing in terms of the number of individuals who are participating in the program. We started the pilot taking males only because best practices in these kinds of drug and specialty courts is to separate the males from the females in terms of the court staffing, the court docket, the hearings, the case managers, that sort of thing. We just started taking female participants. We now have Tucson, Marana, and Oro Valley, as well as Pima County Justice Court, collaborating, and soon we hope to have Sahuarita and South Tucson, and potentially the tribes as well, also involved in referring cases to us. So it's still, we're building the plane as we fly it, but so far we are thrilled about how this program is going and the success that we've had. And you heard that story from Kate about the particular individual that we have who's been able to reduce from 260 to 2 incidents with law enforcement in the last year.
So when we come back, we're going to take a break here in a moment, but when we come back, I want to follow up and finish up by asking you both about all of the other programs along these lines. Thanks so much. Hi, we're back, and this is, again, Jonathan Mosier. I'm here with Amelia Craig Kramer and Kate Vesely, and we're talking about how to make Tucson safer while spending less money, being more effective, and saving lives, really. So we've talked about Drug Treatment Alternative to Prison. We've talked about Compass Court, which is Consolidated Misdemeanor Problem-Solving Court. And Kate, are there other specialty courts? What are they?
We do have a number of other specialty courts throughout the county. Every court has a mental health docket in some form or fashion. There are two veterans courts currently operating, domestic violence courts. I know we're looking at doing DUI courts potentially in the future. And my hope is that we can continue to find funding to create an umbrella of specialty court services so that regardless of what specialty court you're involved in, you can have funding, resources, assistance with housing, transportation. So it doesn't matter what specialty court you're assigned to, that you'll have some parity of the resources that are available to you.
You know, you mentioned that we're looking at doing a DUI court, and there I have to dive in because, you know, I come to this with a little bit different background. I've taken to trial cases where innocent people have been killed on the roadway from DUI offenders. I've sat with mothers of children who were killed in those incidents. And I just think it is a foremost priority for our office to protect the citizens of this community by keeping our roadways safe. So currently, what we've come up with is a system where when a person is sentenced, they go to prison and really, I think, get very, very little treatment. And they may come out worse than they went in. Now, in cases of vehicular homicide, that's just what we have to do to try to keep the streets safe. We can fight for prison reform in some way, and we can try to advocate for treatment, but that's the system. What we're talking about when we talk about a DUI court is the fact that there are people who reoffend and get misdemeanor DUI after misdemeanor DUI. Eventually, they're facing a felony, and they get no treatment, and they may be sent to jail or prison for a very short time and be back out on the road. And what Kate's talking about is trying to get a little smarter and more effective about providing some alternatives to simply locking somebody up and providing them with no treatment. So instead, we could do ankle bracelet monitoring with home arrest and what's called a SCRAM bracelet, which monitors for alcohol intoxication. We could screen the person for treatment and get them into an inpatient facility if they need it. But what we are talking about is trying to be smarter and more effective on crime. So I do want to ask Amelia kind of a tough question, which is, you know, we have something called diversion, and explain what that is and explain why it is smarter and more effective on crime.
So the Pima County Attorney's Office operates both misdemeanor and felony diversion programs for adults, as well as a community justice board diversion program for juveniles. And what diversion is it's after somebody has been arrested or cited for a crime, the prosecutor under state law has authority in certain types of crimes to offer a diversion program. In other words, we suspend prosecution. We give consequences to the participant. If they comply with those consequences and demonstrate success, then we can dismiss the charges. And so, for example, what we've been able to develop in the Pima County Attorney's Office over the past couple of years is a felony drug diversion program for individuals who are arrested for possession of dangerous or narcotic drugs, which would include heroin, cocaine, fentanyl, methamphetamine, not marijuana, because in our county, the county attorney has decided to treat that as a misdemeanor rather than a felony, which she has discretion to do. We also have a diversion program for marijuana possession. So it's treated basically like a traffic citation. The person gets a paper citation for possession. We offer them diversion. They go to a class. They provide a certificate showing they've attended the class and the charges are dismissed. For felony drugs, heroin, fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine, we have a little bit more intensive program where they get screened for whether or not they suffer from substance use disorder, from addiction, and what level of addiction. And the consequence is determined by our provider partner, Community Bridges, who does the assessment and determines whether that individual needs residential treatment, intensive outpatient treatment, lighter outpatient treatment, or whether they're not addicted. Maybe they attended a party and used cocaine for the first time and got caught, and they don't have an addiction problem. They just go to a class. But the participant attends whatever treatment consequence there is, and it's confidential, actually. The prosecutor's office doesn't know what the consequence is. Community Bridges reports back to us whether they're compliant, and if they're able within 6 months to complete whatever that consequence is and pass a drug screening test, then we dismiss all charges.
You know, you used the word consequences and talked about consequences in the context of drug addiction and our diversion and drug court programs, Amelia, and I'm really fascinated by this. You had brought in trainers from out of state who had talked with us recently about consequences, and the example was given that if a person thinks that they won't get caught speeding, maybe they would get caught, there's a small chance, and there's an exorbitant fine, they'll probably continue to speed. And I'll bet there's some listeners who have exceeded the speed limit in their lives, you know, and probably because they thought, well, I won't get caught, even though it would be really bad if I did get caught. What we learned at your training that you hosted for people interested in these topics is that if you have a swift and certain sanction that is actually not that severe. So if, for example, you knew if you sped that it would just auto deduct $10 from your bank account, that it'd all be plugged in somehow to a capture system on the electronics in your car, no one would speed, right? If you just knew it was going to cost you $50 every time or whatever the amount is. And so how does that relate to what we're doing in terms of drug court and diversion to be more effective?
Well, evidence-based best practices show that, just as you indicated, swift and certain consequences are the most effective. And so what we want to do is get people into diversion as soon as possible after they're arrested. We offer diversion at the arraignment, and we try to get the individual screened and into treatment as soon as possible. So within the first 6 months following the arraignment, they have their case dismissed if they're compliant with treatment. And that's the consequence, is we help them get better and they don't have to come back through the criminal justice system.
And we try and differentiate between not only sanctions, but also therapeutic interventions. And so if somebody's going through one of our programs and they have a relapse, that might not necessarily even be a consequence. It might just be we have to do additional treatment, you have to go to detox, you've got to go back to residential treatment. Things like not showing up for court, not going to treatment at all, those are consequences that those have sanctions tied to them.
Can one of you talk about what it's like to be at, have you been to a drug court graduation? Tell us about that.
The drug court graduations are absolutely incredible. They're people who have been reunited with their families, that they can speak in front of family and friends for perhaps the first time in their life. And for many of these individuals, it's not just rehabilitation, it's habilitation. This is the first time that they've been able to be a meaningful participant in society. And so the pride that they demonstrate, the love that their family members, there's balloons, there's flowers. It's like a high school graduation.
So just to summarize, drug court, felony drug diversion, DTAP, these types of programs are designed to take the heroin addict in the park who just keeps possessing heroin. And the old way of approaching this was to send him to prison and lock him up for increasing amount of times, providing no treatment. And then they get out and you do it again. And we all pay dearly for that approach. And so what these approaches do is cost less money and reduce crime and save the lives, not always, but at a much higher rate. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely.
Well, so now what I'm interested in to wrap up, Kate, is to ask you about your expertise in the area of crisis intervention training and working with the mental health support team with law enforcement officers. To try to address mental illness, because that is a topic of interest to everyone.
I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a police officer with Tucson Police Department. He retired from there. And for the last 10 years, I have been one of the co-facilitators for our crisis intervention team training, which is a 40-hour training. It started out for law enforcement. Now we do dispatchers, probation, corrections officers. We've had people from Federal Bureau of Prisons, the Union Pacific Police Department. I didn't even know Union Pacific had a police department. And we spend time talking about not just how to de-escalate somebody who's in crisis, talking about disabilities like autism, individuals who have had combat veterans, elderly individuals, and how to not only interact and get over that fear of perhaps encountering somebody who's experiencing some sort of crisis, because it's very intimidating to be able to have that conversation with someone, but then also how do we redirect them to resources and be the best possible link to treatment that we possibly can in that moment.
So if I'm understanding correctly, you train law enforcement in this area.
I have trained about 1,500 or so in the last 10 years, give or take.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate Amelia Craig Kramer, Chief Deputy at the County Attorney's Office, Kate Vesely, Program Coordinator for all of our myriad of treatment-based approaches. I really appreciate you guys taking the time on a Saturday morning to explain these issues to us. And I just want to sum up by saying, you know, there is perhaps a focus on as should be on first and foremost, what are we doing to get violent, dangerous offenders off the streets? And we're doing that at the Pima County Attorney's Office. We're highly motivated to fight gun violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, and we do that swiftly and with great force. But at the same time, we are really motivated to try to be smarter and more effective about our addressing of drug addiction and mental health issues. So thank you both for all you do. It's inspiring to hear about. Thanks.